Hi, my name is Dr. Christy Lewis, and I'm a licensed naturopathic doctor and holistic nutritionist. I've been in practice for well over a decade and treated thousands of people. Something that keeps me up at night is if people know what to do, then why are they not doing it? If we are all trying to live our best life, then why do we compromise, sabotage, and avoid ourselves from making choices that will ultimately rise us up? A basic truth has been revealed. Behavior modification, as simple as it may seem, is very difficult to implement. Hence the birth of this podcast. In between visits are short and sweet shares where I will answer your questions about how to stay on track, support, inspire, and motivate you on your journey, see you in your struggles, affirm you in your challenge, and reassure you that you are not alone. Let's get started. Hey there, it's Dr. Christy, and you are listening to In Between Visits. I'm super excited that you've decided to join me today. I am back at it with movement. See, we are on the series Movement, and we are in episode 3. Today, I'm going to be sharing with you my thoughts and a little bit of my journey on with exercise and our strong belief that too much of anything, but in this scenario, too much of exercise or movement is not a good thing. And so one of the things that I can't not share right now is this is round 2 for me. So something went on with my app. I hit record and it started recording, but it didn't stay recording. So I have been literally talking to thin air for 20 minutes. So this is take 2. And I see that I am recording now. So hopefully my dog enjoyed the conversation because she was the only one that actually heard it. So anyway, let's hope that doesn't happen again. So today, as I said, movement, too much of a good thing can be a problem. I'm going to share with you a little bit about my journey with exercise. So not everyone understands my relationship with exercise. In fact, after 30 years, I am still sorting it out. I mean, I absolutely need to move. I do know this about myself, and it is a non-negotiable for me. My mental health depends on it. So one thing for me is that I manage anxiety and depression. And it really went unrecognizable to me, undiagnosed, for over 25 years. I really had normalized some of these feelings that I had in my stomach. For me, what happens is I lose my appetite. I feel like sick. I feel nauseous. I have a hard time eating, and the tightness in my chest. I can get really dark, lots of dark thoughts, insomnia, and headaches. And I've been living with this for years, and I'd sort of normalized it, as I said earlier, and found different ways to cope. You know, this is something that for me, it was a really hard time to kind of, and also a blessing when I realized that what was going on for me was anxiety, you know, was a very, very sensitive nervous system that I work with, or that embodies me. And you know, really, there was a lot of forgiveness and a lot of healing around this, because I have been a person that hasn't had a linear journey. I don't think many of us do. I do think we learn and grow through our different experiences, and that's really the beauty of wisdom, empathy, compassion comes. But I really kind of thought, come to a point where maybe I was making bad decisions. I'd always find myself in different situations, whether it be relationship or work, where it almost seemed like I was screwing up all the time. So one of the things I've come to learn is that a lot of the decisions I was making was coming from a place of anxiety, which is really, you know, riddled in fear, control. It's really hard to connect to your inner self, your inner values, your own intuition when you're in a chronic state of fight or flight. And so not having this diagnosed or understanding this, and then certainly not being able to support myself naturopathically, I really struggled through my life with this and found coping at times difficult. So one of the things that I learned early on in life was exercise, and I did lots and lots of it because that seemed to soothe some of these feelings. It started young. I mean, I can remember being 13, 14 years old, and, you know, needing to, you know, go for runs. I would get up early and run around the block a few times before school. I didn't really understand why I was doing this, but I knew that it made me feel better. You know, something about this movement changed my perspective, and the days that I ran were easier, lighter, and more manageable. It's really interesting, as a side note, anyone who works with me knows I can go off on tangents, but I feel like this is just important to hold space for, is that I recently heard some results of a study that indicated that girls' confidence peaks at 9. That's like 9 years old. So all those feelings of worthiness, all that internal value, all the feeling of confidence is peaking at 9. And, you know, I think about that, and I think about that in my own journey, and it really makes my heart hurt. But it also fits kind of with my timelines of when I started to question myself, my identity, and not feel comfortable in my own skin. And, you know, anyone who has, you know, a daughter or nieces or is a teacher, I think we want to hold this space and really look at that and try to always uplift our girls. I look at my six-year-old daughter, and the other day she came home and she was like, and so mom, I've decided that I'm going to like do gymnastics and go to school until I'm old enough to join Cirque du Soleil. And like, she has like unwavering confidence that if she wants to like be a trapeze artist on Cirque du Soleil, that like that's absolutely obtainable to her. And you know what? It is. It's just amazing to me that she has such amazing confidence, and I don't ever want her to lose that. And so I think, you know, one of the things for us that, you know, we didn't maybe have the awareness around what was happening to us and our sort of challenges or with self-identity and challenges with our sense of being is that, you know, a lot of that is where that anxiety and or depression and then the poor decisions that come with that, which is just, again, that cycling impact of the nervous system. And so that was really my journey. And I found running helped. I found those days would be easier. And so unfortunately, like any good thing, more wasn't always better. And of course, I didn't have this awareness yet. I mean, I was 13, 14, 15. All I knew was that a 15-minute run made me feel good. So a 45-minute run would make me feel even better. And, you know, right up to hour, 2 hour, 3 hour. And then in my early 20s, running marathons. So the worse I felt mentally and emotionally, the faster and harder I ran. And so became my addiction. That was really the starting point of needing high intensity exercise or endurance exercise or as a way to ease my mental and emotional and even sometimes physical discomfort. And so as much as that, you know, even logically sounds like a good solution, it wasn't. I mean, this scenario only worked and continues to work because this is old for me. This is, you know, my knee-jerk reaction when I'm feeling uncomfortable is to hit the gym. And it only works when everything else is in line with that. And if you can't access that, you're in trouble. And, you know, you can't always access that. So I've learned over the years the hard way that having only one kind of remedy or coping mechanism for those difficult days or difficult weeks or difficult months is not ideal. And it comes with a few obvious flaws. So let me share. So one of the first things I would say that has been a challenge around this over-exercising or this need to exercising as a way to soothe myself was misunderstandings from loved ones, including families and friends. You know, why does she, like, we're on vacation, why is she going out for a run? You know, it's Saturday morning, why is she going to the gym? And, you know, I think a big part of that was a misunderstanding, and it wasn't personal. It's never personal. You know, I have, and I'm aware of it now. Is it gone? No. But I am aware that there's a running spreadsheet in my head of pros and cons. And so at that time in my life, or during those times in my life, you know, really the should around going to the gym or the commitment or the kind of punishing aspect of going to work out or run overrode the connection or maybe the spontaneity of a glass of wine with my friends or a Saturday morning cuddle with my family. And, you know, I'm starting now to lean into, and I, you know, again, I'm a work in progress, but I'm starting to lean into the fact that sometimes these other aspects, you know, these connection with family and friends, as opposed to being on the move and hitting the gym, can actually have a bigger benefit. And that it doesn't only have to come through that physical fitness and that those endorphins that come, you know, or that that feeling of accomplishment that can soothe or satiate this anxiety or discomfort in my body. So that's number one, is really missing out with family and friends, missing out with opportunities because you're so directed and driven, or you feel awful and that's the only way you can feel better. A second would be really a misbelief system and this idea that you have to push hard 100% of the time. And I recently attended a Z course actually just this weekend, and it was incredible insight from one of the top sport medicine doctors in our country and another naturopathic doctor. And he brought a really fascinating insight to the concept of overtraining syndrome, which really is when, you know, you're when you're exercising too much. And he was awesome. I mean, this is Dr. Lowell Grubb, and he runs a practice or a clinic actually out of Muskoka. And he was talking about, you know, he works with like Olympic athletes and he works like with day-to-day weekend warriors. And it's not so much around doing too much. It is, can you heal? Can you recover? So it's the idea around, where are you in your life? And if you are running every single day, if you are going to the gym every day, what else is going on that's going to potentially allow you to recover or to not recover? And so high intensity workouts with little space for physical as well as mental and emotional recovery is going to be a problem for you. I mean, especially if you're already in a state of anxiety, if you've been running from a bear, or fighting a bear in the woods, then everyday life, then when you hit a hardcore boot camp, your body's not like, it doesn't differentiate. It's going to still be pumping out all those hormones and adrenaline. And yes, you're going to feel amazing post-class, but unfortunately the darkness, the exhaustion, the feeling of muscle fatigue, and even that negative, those negative sensations will come back with a vengeance the next morning because you haven't been able to recover. So being able to look at, you know, what else is going on in your life, and looking at, if you are hitting the gym hard, are you able to actually recover? The third flaw is disconnection. So I talked about disconnection potentially with family and friends, but it's also from yourself. You know, running, lifting, jumping, whatever you're doing is a wonderful distraction. It's a distraction. You're not going to heal wounds, trauma, you know, you're not going to heal that with running or jumping. You have to sit with the feelings. And that's the only way to move through the feelings. Like, I went through a divorce in my late 20s, and it was really painful. I mean, it was just a really hard time. I mean, I felt so many different things: alone, failure, betrayal. And during this time, I got in the best shape of my life. Well, kind of makes sense. I mean, if exercise was my only medicine for mental and emotional discomfort, and divorce causes suffering and lots of it, you can only imagine how much I was moving. In fact, I couldn't even sit still. I'm sure my family and friends were like, oh my gosh, what? You know, she's going to crash and burn. And, you know, those short-term bursts did get me through that time, or so I thought. You know, but in hindsight, and I learned, as I said, a lot much later, that I never sat with the pain and I never sat with the emotions. And when I felt discomfort like anger, grief, fear, I hit the gym or I went for a run, and it only became a Band-Aid. And, you know, sometimes we need to put a Band-Aid on these emotions. But, you know, it only kept the pain away while I was doing it, and it never allowed me to fully process what had happened. So it wasn't until years later that I discovered meditation that I truly stopped and unpacked the emotions and some of the trauma and wounds from that time in my life. I mean, I'd be like in a meditation class, or I would be in Shavasana, and I'd be start bawling. I'm like, what is this about? You know, and realizing that I was still carrying a lot of pain from that time in my life. And so, again, exercise is wonderful. I mean, I'm not, you know, saying we shouldn't exercise. What I'm saying is, when we're doing it for the, I don't want to say wrong reasons, or we're just kind of, or we're doing it to, you know, not have to deal with certain things. It's just like any other kind of addiction. And at some point we're going to have to take a look at those things that are causing all the pain. And the other flaw, number four. So we've moved through disconnection with yourself, with others, this idea around a belief system of more is better. And then, you know, it really does, flaw number four lacks a plan B. So you can imagine if, you know, if you get injured, you know, or illness or exhaustion, which inevitably is going to happen, no one is immune to these things, you will be in trouble because you don't have access to your addiction. And, you know, if you can't get the fix and that's your only tool for self-care, then you may move into a state of panic. Certainly even darker days. For me, the common cold became so much more than a common cold. It was, you know, people would say, oh, just rest, you know, and it was panic time. It was panic time for me because, like, I can't go to the gym. I can't run. What am I going to do? And so those days were really difficult when, you know, all I really needed to do was rest. All of these flood of emotions would come to the surface and I couldn't access relief through the exercise. And therefore, you know, it was really a lot of additional suffering over and above, you know, being injured or potentially having some, you know, illness or sickness. The last thing is light, and that's really the loss of joy in play. So flaw number five, when we are overdoing exercise or we are using exercise as our primary tool for self-soothing or to manage difficult emotions, is, you know, this loss of the very fundamentals, the very gift of movement, which is joy and play. And our bodies are meant to move. I don't know about you, if you've danced through your kitchen or skipped through the forest, you know, it feels good. I feel a little bit weird, but it does feel good. And it is fundamentally a necessity for a healthy body and soul. When movement becomes this rigid, punishing, sort of there's no flow, we lose all of that. And most of my life, you know, I thought activities like yoga or expressive dance, Tai Chi, was a complete waste of time. I would never say that out loud because, you know, I, in my thinking mind or my rational mind would be like, oh, I think it's good. Or I should do those things. But I wouldn't, you know, I'd always, you know, choose the more intensity things because I felt like those things were a waste of time. I mean, they weren't you didn't get productive. You know, it wasn't like you're getting all those, that high feeling after. You couldn't cross it off your list as far as like how many miles you ran. So for me, you know, lying around on a mat or flowing to music just seemed kind of pointless. And, you know, I was totally ignorant. I was ignorant to the subtle benefits of kind of moving the stagnant energy or chi, as well as the beautiful lightness that comes with just free-flowing movement. So now I dance in the kitchen, you know, or move organically on my mat without attachment, judgment, outcome. And you know what? It's so much fun and it's surprisingly healing and it counts. It counts in for health. It counts for, you know, bringing our body as a center, and it can really lift some of these emotions that are so heavy and can cause us to feel unwell in our bodies and mind and soul. So don't get me wrong. I mean, exercise is always going to be a huge part of my life. And it's really important for body, mind, and soul. The difference, or the, let's call it the awareness that we want to have is the ability to pause and become, you know, in tune with what we need. So the time, the intensity, even the intention of what it is we're about to do. So instead of going to hills and doing repeats, maybe, you know, maybe going for a nice, nourishing walk in the woods, or potentially enjoying a slow moving Saturday morning. You know, these things may actually offer more self-care, more healing, a larger return on investment than, you know, always hitting it hard. The flip side, you know, sometimes I really do need to go lift heavy weights instead of having a tea with a friend. And I don't make that wrong either. It's not that one is right and one is wrong. The difference is we want to be aware and we want to move into the opportunity of choice as opposed to only having one direction for self-care. I mean, I hope to be 85 first in line at the shuffleboard game, you know, but I also always want to have the desire and the wisdom to choose what is best for the moment and know that there's lots of possibilities towards feeling well, you know, on all levels. So on that note, I am actually going out to meet a friend for a hike in the woods. True story. So that's it for today. You can find all this information on my blog my website, drchristylewis.ca. And thanks so much for listening. Okay, bye.